You'd open your Bibles to 2 Kings chapter 21. I will read verses 19 through 26. Amon was 22 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 2 years in Jerusalem. And then it gives his mother's name and his daughter. And he did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his father Manasseh did. And he walked in all the way that his father walked in, and served the idols that his father served, and worshipped them. And he forsook the Lord God of his fathers, and walked not in the way of the Lord. And the servants of Amon conspired against him, and slew the king in his own house. And the people of the land slew all that had conspired against King Amon. And the people of the land made Josiah his son king in his stead. Now the rest of the acts of Amon, which he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And he was buried in a sepulcher in the garden of Uzzah. And Josiah, his son, reigned in his stead. You may be seated. Kind of unusual scripture to read, but it tells of a time when what happened? The king reigned for 2 years, and then he was what? Yeah, assassinated by a conspiracy. He was assassinated. Why is this in the Bible? Why is an assassination in the Bible? And there's all kinds of history in the Bible, isn't there? The Bible is quite a book. But I think, like most people, just put it down to maybe about half a book. They just... some things that Jesus said, and some quotes and Proverbs, and that's about it. But there's a lot of things. Assassinations. What if I talk about assassination? Is that a topic for a sermon? Well, if it's in the Bible, I would think it would be. Have you ever wondered what was going on in the earth when you were born? And you lived in your infancy and your adolescence. When I was born, the United States had just entered the war in Europe for about 11 months. I was born November 10th, 1942. The United States only got into the war with the false flag attack with the Japanese at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. The Freemasons, who were leaders in all of the major powers of the earth, in all the major powers, brought everything together. Nation fighting against nation. For what? I asked a simple question in my fifth grade Sunday school class, and the teacher was a member of the U.S. Army in World War II. He told us a lot of war stories. My question was, why did the United States fight against Germany if we both worship the same God and instead fought on the side with the atheists of the Soviet Union? That bothered me as being in fifth grade. I thought if I was in the war, I would be praying while in my foxhole to my God to spare my life, while the German would be praying to the same God to spare his. This wouldn't be the case if we were fighting the Soviet Union. But the question fell off into a deep pit of apathy when I received no good answer to my questions. And my life continued with trivial events. But as I read the Bible, I was perplexed with a reoccurring problem. Jesus Christ and his disciples and early followers were hated by a particular people. When I say hated, I mean hated. They plotted his murder and the murder of his disciples and later his followers, and many were executed. My question was, how could these people be equal in the eyes of God to the people they murdered, including his only son? Was the Bible correct? If it was, that meant that the Church of Jesus Christ had an enemy. An enemy that was still an enemy. An enemy that desired the complete destruction of Christianity. The Bible said that the two forces would fight to the end, being enemies. My question, how could these two groups be friends, as most of the churches declare their members to love everyone? I will tell you today what I have found out about the days of my youth. And I will tell you, you do not have to believe it. All I ask is that you just keep on studying. Here's what I found out. According to Eustace Mullins, I think most of you know who Eustace Mullins was. What a researcher this guy was. He's the only person that got kicked out of the Library of Congress. He practically lived there. According to Eustace Mullins, Hitler met with Allen and John Foster Dulles in 1933. That's 9 years before my birth. They were acting as legal representatives of Schief and Warburg's Kuhn, Loeb, and Company, which was a major part of the Rothschild's network. What was the purpose of their meeting? Kuhn and Loeb had extended a large short-term credits to Germany and needed to ensure the repayments of those loans. The Dulles brothers assured Hitler that he would receive the funds necessary to be installed as Chancellor of Germany if he promised to repay the debts. Who were Allen and John Foster Dulles? I remember the names growing up, but I didn't know much about them. The two brothers who were guaranteeing loans to Adolf Hitler in 1933. They were descendants of one of the families that introduced the Scottish Rite to America. Allen Dulles served as a director and president of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he worked with the Vatican and the Nazis at the end of the war to protect and help launder the enormous Nazi Reich Bank treasures. The two brothers also had a great influence over Judeo-Christianity. But it was an evil influence, for they were two of the most degenerate traitors and scoundrels the world has ever seen. John Foster Dulles, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, was chairman of the board of the Rockefeller Foundation, and he married a Rockefeller. He also was an important official. He was the secretary of the Federal Council of Churches of Christ. He also played a big leadership role in the World Council of Churches. I always figured those groups were bad. He was instrumental in getting the Federal Council of Churches of Christ to support the United Nations and its UNESCO program. Remember UNESCO in school? Skull and Bones member Archibald MacLeish actually wrote the UNESCO Constitution and several Freemasons helped create the organization. Once it was created, it has served as a conduit for Illuminati instructions and propaganda. And when I was in school, the schools promoted their propaganda. And that's something. After leaving the State Department in 1926, Alan Douglas joined Illuminati's Wall Street firm of Sullivan and Cromwell with his brother. The firm, Sullivan and Cromwell, had many clients from the United States, Germany, and Great Britain, including the German Jew Sigmund Warburg. The Dulles brothers, along with others, played both sides during World War II and made enormous wartime profits. For example, when patriots in the United States government and England protested the Standard Oil about their collaboration, Standard Oil and the Saudis threatened to quit shipping Middle East oil to England and America, which would seriously cripple their war efforts. Alan Douglas, working for the pro-German Saudis and Standard Oil, told the Senate Committee on National Defense, which had discovered Standard Oil's collaboration with the Nazis, to drop the matter or face an oil embargo. That's enough about the Dulleses. But it's very hard for most people to grasp that the Illuminati controlled Germany, Russia, Great Britain, France, and the United States during World War II. But I will tell you that Winston Churchill, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Joseph Stalin, Charles de Gaulle, and many of the Nazis were Freemasons, or members of groups that were very closely related to Freemason groups. But now let's look at the Bushes. Remember the Bushes? Prescott, the grandfather, George the First, who became president, and George the Second, who also became president. Prescott Bush was a friend of a Nazi, a partner in Brown Harriman. E. Howard Hunt was working with Harriman in Europe. United Bank funds, which held Nazi funds, were seized by Herbert Hoover, director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. Through the Union Banking Corporation, Prescott Bush, whose nickname was Hitler's Angel, along with his father-in-law, George Herbert Walker, and German industrious Fritz Thyssen, became Hitler's bankers. In 1934, Germany was producing only 300,000 tons of natural petroleum products and synthetic gasoline. By 1944, thanks to the transfer of technology from Standard Oil of New Jersey to IG Farben Company, the company began producing 6.5 million tons of oil, 85% which was synthetic. This made it possible for IG Farben to synthesize fuel from coal gasification to make aviation for fuel, gas for their tanks and war machines, and for synthesizing rubber for making tires. In a book by Fritz Thyssen, he wrote a book called I Paid Hitler in 1941. It described how Hitler used the money he received from Fritz Thyssen through Prescott Bush to sponsor the stormtroopers as early as 1933 and allowing them to build up to 4,500,000 strong to take over Germany. In 1942, the year of my birth, Hoover seized the funds Prescott Bush had with Nazi Germany under the Trading with the Enemy Act. Do you think that that made Prescott Bush angry? I didn't know a thing about it. But nevertheless, Prescott Bush was paid a fortune for his part in Hitler's war. This is the legacy that he left to his son, President George Bush I. Prescott Bush was a member of the Skull and Bones at Yale University. The year was 1917. He became a legendary bonesman because he was a member of a group that stole one of its most treasured artifacts. What did Prescott Bush steal? A skull that was said to be of the great Apache chief, Geronimo. Prescott Boss was Avil Harriman, another member of the Skull and Bones, and Alan Dulles again, who worked for Avil Harriman. In 1946, Prescott changed politicians from Hitler in Germany to Nixon in the United States. Nixon hired Hunt and Jack Ruby. Getting a little bit confusing, isn't it? So then we had an order as president. We had Roosevelt, followed by Truman, followed by Eisenhower, followed by JFK, Kennedy. Now I'll talk a little bit about Kennedy. He was only president for about 20 months because he was assassinated. But who assassinated him? Contrary to the Warren Commission, the United States Select Committee on Assassinations concluded that Kennedy was possibly assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. The committee found that the original FBI investigation and the Warren Commission report to be seriously flawed. JFK was the first Roman Catholic president, but maybe it was due to his youth. He discovered the great evil that was against the United States, and he tried to correct it. I'm going to give you three of the major things that was a big problem for him. First was the Cuban problem. Castro took over the control of Cuba. With the net result, there were many refugees from Cuba in the United States. These rebels were put into a fighting unit to attack Cuba. You remember that? In addition, the Russians had missile sites built in Cuba, which is a major problem. They're only 90 miles away. Kennedy and the Central Intelligence Agency were at odds as how to solve the problem. Who was the director who deliberately disobeyed? He directly disobeyed President Kennedy in the Cuban crisis. Alan Dulles. And who later served in the same role? George Herbert Walker Bush. The second major issue was the Federal Reserve Bank. JFK was not afraid to, quote, unquote, buck the system, for he understood how the Federal Reserve System was being used to destroy the United States. He could not tolerate such a system. Kind of getting like the father of the person in the Colorado deal. On June the 4th, 1963, President Kennedy signed a presidential document called the Executive Order such and such, which further amended another executive order, which gave Kennedy legal clearance to create his own money to run the country. Money that would belong to the people. Money that would be what? Interest and debt-free money. He had printed United States notes, completely ignoring the Federal Reserve notes from the private banks of the Federal Reserve. He did that, and I didn't have a clue he did that. Kennedy issued about $4.5 billion of cash money. Listen to this. It was perfectly obvious that Kennedy was out to undermine the Federal Reserve System of the United States. President Kennedy was no doubt going to repeal the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and return back to the United States Congress the power to create its own money. It is interesting to note that only one day after Kennedy's assassination, all of the United States notes which Kennedy had issued were called out of circulation, and not a word was said to the American people. The third thing that Kennedy had a problem with was the Vietnam War. By the fall of 1963, Kennedy was ready to cut his losses and pull out of Vietnam. Since South Vietnam's government was so unpopular, Kennedy saw no chance of United States victory without an impossibly large commitment of resources. He sent a high-level fact-finding mission to Vietnam, and it proposed the withdrawal of 1,000 United States troops by the end of the year and the phase-out of United States military forces by the end of 1965. Shortly before Kennedy was assassinated, he announced he was going to bring home all the American soldiers from Vietnam by the end of the year. He just used a little bit of common sense. He also called off the invasion of Cuba and canceled $70 billion in military contracts. He felt that he had been deceived by the CIA, who were secretly conducting covert actions against Cuba and trying to assassinate Castro, which had nearly started a nuclear war with Russia. President Kennedy angrily vowed to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces. In other words, he was going to destroy it. Oh, so you got the CIA fighting against the president. The CIA didn't do what the president wanted. CIA knew all the stuff that they were up to. He was going to destroy the CIA. The New York Times published a 600-page report that revealed the notorious mass murders that the CIA had committed during the past 30 years. President Kennedy also ordered the CIA to stop importing and selling drugs to the American people to finance their gun running, assassination, wars, and covert operations. And he sent the FBI to locate their camps and shut them down. I think he was really after them, don't you? There are more groups that Kennedy got mad at and vice versa. But this is enough for this sermon. Let's look at a few points of assassination. They had people that took, I guess they were movies. I'm not quite sure if they had videos back then. But his car went along Dallas, and there were people that were crowded, 10 to 15 rows of people. And then they turned down this longer street, and there was hardly any people there. Did you ever notice that? Where he was shot, there was hardly any people on either side. There's a handful of people. The CIA had prevented most people from being on that particular route. The second thing was Lee Harvey Oswald. It was claimed that he was up on the sixth floor of the school depository. If he shot Kennedy, it would have shot him in the back. But Kennedy was also shot above the right eye, which threw him backward and to the left into his wife's lap. I remember this scene immensely. Jackie, his wife, crawling on back of a convertible. I thought she was trying to get away from the shots. No, she wasn't trying to do that. She crawled back on the vehicle and grabbed the piece of his skull. It shot through his eye, blew a hole in the back of his skull, 3.5-inch hole, and landed on the back of the car. She went back, grabbed it, came back, and put it on her husband's head. And notice the car didn't speed off until the driver looked back and saw he was dead. Lee Harvey Oswald betrayed the CIA when he told the FBI about the location of the camps the CIA was operating. The CIA was telling Hoover that to cross them was to die. They got rid of both Kennedy and Oswald in 2 days. Fourth thing. Oswald was murdered on Sunday on live TV, wasn't he? 2 days after Kennedy's assassination by a person whose alias was Jack Ruby. His real name was Jacob Rubenstein. That's his real name. He happened to be a Jew who grew up in the city of Chicago. He was involved in just about everything that was evil in Dallas. But the murder of Oswald ended any major trial. The fifth thing, there was no autopsy done on Kennedy's body in Dallas. You always do the autopsy in the city that he was killed in. His body was put in a casket and placed on a plane that flew to Washington, D.C. The body was stolen twice. And when it arrived in the capital city, it was in a body bag. The sixth thing, President Kennedy's body was mutilated. Get this. The person who performed the autopsy in Washington never had done one before that had gunshot wounds. Oh, that's good. Let's pick a person who's very immature at this stuff, hadn't done many, an amateur, and let him do it. It's only the President of the United States. And get this. Shortly after he performed the autopsy, he burnt his papers. Nobody burns their papers. Autopsy. The seventh, future President Richard Nixon was a member of the CIA and was in Dallas at the time of Kennedy's murder. The eighth thing, Secret Service men who were usually stationed on the back of the car, they had little knobs that they held on to, and the police motorcyclists who drove on both sides of the limousine were told to leave the area and fall back from the limo when it turned down this street. So they had no bodyguards. And who was placed at the head of the famous Warren Commission? Alan Dulles. The tenth reason, the CIA had the assassination put on hold by President Kennedy's route in Miami, Florida, was changed at the last minute. The assassinators then traveled from Miami to Dallas. The 11th, the theory was that there was one magic bullet, as the Warren Commission believed, that hit Kennedy, hit Connally, hit Kennedy, or went back and forth, is the most amazing shot ever took. And the bullet came out, they found it on the thing they carried him in the hospital, found it there, and it had no dents in it at all. It was a perfect, it was the most amazing bullet ever. This is one of the biggest lies ever told to the American people. But they've been telling lies all through my life. I found out they're the biggest liars ever. There are many more strange happenings. Like the CIA director, Warren Colby, who was fired because he told too much truth about the CIA and was replaced by George Bush, who quickly squashed the investigation. Colby, by the way, was later found dead. It was claimed that he drowned in a canoe accident near his home, and his dead body was found in the pond 9 days later. I think he was murdered, don't you? It wouldn't be long until this former president of the CIA, George Bush, would say the following. What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order.
lasted that September
11th, 1991. Most of the evil in this world is highly coordinated, and it's fulfilling biblical prophecy to the letter. Though the world is not yet in an apocalyptic state, the forces of organized evil affect us all now and must be resisted like never before. If the Bible's explanation of evil is just a myth, then why are so many anti-Christians doing everything they can to fulfill that myth? Is today's sermon relevant? Let's look at what a website said that was very sarcastic about Christian identity. In other words, it was slamming what we believe. I'm going to read you a section they said. I'm going to make a little comment after. All right, it began by saying, Christian identity borrows paranoid conspiratorial beliefs from reactionary groups such as the John Birch Society. My comment is, I don't take much from this group, as it's basically Mormon. Then they go on and say, Birchers claim that secret cabals run most of the world governments under orders from wealthy elites such as Rockefeller family, acting through groups such as the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Banking Conference, the Council on Foreign Relations, and officials of the Federal Reserve Bank. My comment is, Berkshires may claim this statement, but it is true. It's absolutely 100% true. They go on and say, Christian identity wraps all the conspiracy theories together and adds this myth, that the white Christian Americans are God's chosen people fighting a religious war against satanic forces. Well, that's exactly right. Except it's not a myth. It's the truth of the Bible. Someone is the elect of God. The Bible teaches that God made an unconditional covenant with Abraham, confirmed it with his son Isaac, and then confirmed it with his grandson Jacob. Then he promised our fathers that the seed, that's the descendants, would become many people, kings, priests, and nations. God said to his line of Jacob, Israel, that they would be his people, and he would be their God. The writer of this article does not say who the unconditional covenant was made with. He just implies that it was made with no one in particular. It goes on and says, the Jews killed Christ. And then in the later 1700s, a Jew named Adam Weishaupt, closely disguised as a Catholic priest, renounced Catholicism and created a satanic cult. This organization called the Illuminati quickly gained the support of the Jews. My comment is, yes, the Jews murdered Jesus Christ. And in 1776, Adam Weishaupt, a Jew described as a Jesuit, created the Illuminati. But it didn't gain the support of the Jews, for the Jews already supported it. They gave instructions to Adam to begin the new organization, a secret organization. They continue. One particular Jewish family, the Rothschilds, took a particular interest and took control of the Illuminati. The Illuminati took over the Freemasons. My comment, the timing is off again. The Rothschilds had control of the Illuminati from its beginning. And since one had to be a Freemason in order to be Illuminati, they controlled the Freemasons too. In fact, most of them were members of the group. The article goes on and says the Rothschilds had a big family and a lot of money. In fact, they had enough money to finance the French Revolution and every war since. My comment is, at that time, the Rothschilds were said to have almost half of all the money in the world. enough money to finance all the wars. The article goes on saying, in fact, they had enough money to finance the French Revolution and every war since. They even had a hand, my comment, they even had a hand in the American Revolution too. The website goes on and says, the Rothschilds had their family dispersed throughout Europe and America in the intent of cooperating with other Jews to take over all financial institutions. The Federal Reserve, Wall Street, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, all international banks are now controlled by Jews, and Jews control all the media. See, that's said sarcastically, like it's not true. My comment, Rothschilds had his five sons dispersed to the five main cities of Europe. One went to London, one went to Paris, one went to Naples, one went to Vienna, and the other stayed in Frankfurt. If you take the list of names of all the officers of the following organizations, you will find that the majority are Jews. For example, who have been the leaders of the Federal Reserve Bank? They all have been Jews. It goes on and says, using the power of the Illuminati and the money of the Rothschilds, the Jewish bankers have created communism. Set up a puppet United States government known as Zionist Occupied Government and created liberalism and the Democratic Party. My comment is, and they also created the Republican Party too. And who are the leaders of communism? Let's see, Karl Marx, he's what, son of a rabbi. Lenin, he's a Jew, wrong name, changed his name. Trotsky, he changed his name. They're all were Jews. If we'll turn in our Bible to Acts chapter 13, I'll just show you one of many, many, many places. And if you will focus on the 16th verse. Quote, the Apostle Paul stood up and beckoned with his hand. To whom? And the 16th verse tells you who he was speaking to. Who was he talking to? The men of Israel. He wasn't talking to the Africans. He wasn't talking to the Asians. He wasn't talking to the Edomites. He was talking to the men of Israel. Paul then goes on and repeats the history of Israel. That they were in Egypt. That they experienced the Exodus. That they wandered for 40 years. That they destroyed the seven nations in the land of Canaan. They destroyed those nations. The land was divided by lot. They were ruled by judges. Afterward, God gave them kings. God later gave them the seed of David from which Jesus Christ came. John the Baptist fulfilled his course. Jesus was crucified and buried and then resurrected from the grave. And many days was seen of them before he ascended into heaven. He gives the complete quick history. Then the Apostle Paul says, so go down to verse 32. And we declare unto you glad tidings, how that the promise which was made unto who? The fathers. God has fulfilled the same unto us, their children. And they say that the Bible is not racial. This is a racial statement. Fathers, children. Who do you believe has the light going on his sermon? Is it the light in the torch of the Olympic torch? The Olympic torch. The opening and closing ceremonies all shows the New World Order. The light in the torch of the Paramount and Columbia movies. The woman hanging with a big torch. The light in the torch of the Statue of Liberty, which is given from one Freemason to the Freemasons of America. The light on the torch on the reverse side of the dime. The light of the torch of the Amoco torch. And there's many, many others. The Washington Monument is the phallic symbol of Osiris. The Congress building is the feminine building, and along with the lake right below it shows reflection as above, so below. There's an owl which is outlined around the Congress building. The owl, the false god Moloch, was worshipped by the Ammonites and is the main deity in the Bohemian Grove, where the sacrifice of care takes place. 13 streets from the White House is the Freemasonic Lodge. Or is it the light of the God of Israel? Notice what the apostle adds to what he just said. It says, "For so hath the Lord commanded us, saying, I have set thee to be a light of the Gentiles." It's verse 47. "For so hath the Lord commanded us, saying, I have set thee to be a light of the Gentiles." Who were the Gentiles? The Israelites of the house of Israel. I'll give you another verse. It's found Jeremiah chapter 5, 26 through 29, where it says, "For among my people are found wicked men. They lay wait as he that set a snare. They set a trap. They catch men. A cage is full of birds. So are their houses full of deceit. Therefore they are become great and waxen rich. They are waxen fat, they shine. Yea, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless. Yet they prosper. The right of the needy do they not judge. Shall I not visit for these things, saith the Lord? And shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this?" I will tell you that 9/11 was more than just a destruction. It was actually a Masonic ritual murder. They made many mistakes, which they covered up to the masses of the people through the media. But the most encouraging news is not everyone believes the lies that they say. They made a huge mistake. The plane that was supposed to hit Building 7 was actually blown up in Pennsylvania. The two main towers in Building 7 were all preset with explosives to bring the buildings all down when the airplanes hit the building. None of them worked the way they were supposed to. The two towers had to be pulled an hour to 2 hours after the planes hit them. And Building 7, since the plane was shot down in Pennsylvania, had to be brought down on its own. But most of America does not know that three towers came down on September 11, 2001. Ask them. They just know of two. Why did it have to be brought down? Because it had to fulfill their tree of life, their tarot card, and their Freemasonic decorations in every lodge. And they failed, and it showed their imperfections. What nation has wicked men that trap men, whose houses are full of deceit, who fail to judge the cause of an orphan? America is one such nation. And the main problem is the silence of her churches, her pulpits. For while our nation is murdering its babies in the womb, our schools are indoctrinating our children in secular humanism, our politicians are assassinating some of their members by joining associations and supporting the New World Order, and our preachers in the nation are attending church growth seminars, using self-help books to supplement the Bible, and having their church choirs sing rock and roll music. They are fiddling while the nation burns, building their temples and cathedrals rather than the kingdom of Jesus Christ. May God have mercy on the soul of the United States and the other Israelite nations. Amen.